Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 7, Episode 6, The Jōkyū War. The rift between the imperial court and the shogunate had been growing for 2 decades when they finally came to blows in 1221. Retired Emperor Go-Toba had been performing displays of independence since the latter days of Yoritomo, and he finally felt emboldened enough to rally troops and make his move. The courtiers who had previously restrained the retired sovereign were drowned out by those with a firmly anti-shogunate stance who were partly emboldened by events that occurred 2 years before, in 1219. I mentioned in the previous episode that the Bakufu wanted to nominate a member of the imperial family for the office of shogun in the wake of Sanetomo's assassination. They specifically requested Prince Masanari, the younger brother of sitting emperor Juntoku. The prince was 18 years old at the time, already married, and is remembered as one of Japan's finest poets. Go-Toba In did not refuse this request immediately, but instead tried to negotiate. He demanded the shogunate reverse their condemnation against a gokenin whom he had befriended, and the release of several large shōen estates into the court's possession. Yoshitoki and Masako balked at these demands, and both agreed that they could not allow the Daijō Daikan to become competing arbiters of land distribution. Such a precedent could eventually make the emperor and his kuge influential enough to challenge Kamakura. In response, they dispatched Hōjō Tokifusa, Yoshitoki's younger brother, to negotiate with the retired emperor in Heian-kyō. For an escort, they sent 1,000 mounted samurai in hopes that the court would be intimidated by a show of force. However, Go-Toba In stood firm and refused to budge even a little in the negotiations. Tokifusa returned unsuccessful, while Masako and Yoshitoki turned to a different source of legitimacy for their next shogun, the Kujō branch of the Fujiwara regents. The Kujō branch was founded by Fujiwara Kanezane, also known as Kujō Kanezane, whom you may remember from Episode 2. After Yoritomo betrayed him in an ill-advised and unsuccessful attempt to marry his daughter to the emperor, Kanezane retired to a monastery and lived his days out as a monk. His family continued to serve in various posts throughout the Daijō Daikan, and if they held any grudge against Kamakura, it had been long since resolved by 1219. When the shogunate requested that Kujō Michie, then serving as Sadaijin, or Minister of the Left, send his third son to Kamakura to become the next shogun, he assented. The boy was only a little over a year old at the time. Although minimally satisfied with their new candidate for shogun, the leaders of the Bakufu no doubt harbored some bitterness about the decision. They had expected the Daijō Daikan to panic and fold when faced with a warband of hardened Kanto samurai, but for once the court had not blinked. A shogun hailing from the regent line of the Fujiwara clan would secure some legitimacy for the shogunate, but not as much as an imperial prince. In the meantime, the court was not idle. In 1221, Go-Toba In announced the retirement of the sitting emperor Juntoku and the elevation of Juntoku Tenno's 2-year-old son as the new emperor. The boy is remembered as Emperor Chūkyō. All of this was done without the Bakufu's permission or input. At first glance, this seems like more imperial court shenanigans which the shogunate could shrug off or resolve with a threatening letter. This time, however, retired Emperor Go-Toba had a plan. The court threw a huge party celebrating the newly crowned Emperor Chūkyō, inviting many high-ranking samurai who resided in or near the capital. The anti-Bakufu faction within the imperial court used these invitations to gauge the loyalty of these warriors. If they accepted the invitations and showed up at the party, they had proven they were loyal to the Ten No and his government. If they declined, however, it was taken as a sign that their fealty lay with Kamakura. At least one ranking officer was outed in this manner and assassinated shortly thereafter. The retired emperor arranged a horse archery competition after the party, inviting many prominent samurai from around the Kansai region. Using this contest as a pretext for gathering a large number of warriors in one place, he invited them to fight on behalf of the Daijo Daikon and to join him in his effort to put an end to the government in Kamakura. It is not known with certainty how many were recruited in this way, but I think an estimate of around 2,000 is probably about right. Many of those who joined him were Gokenin from prominent Kanto families. Gotoba-in was especially determined to recruit members of powerful eastern clans in hopes that their families in Kanto would join the cause by default. Even Oe Chikahiro, the son of Oe Hiromoto, who was then serving as a representative of the shogun, eventually gave in to the retired emperor's coercion and joined, or at least gave sufficient lip service to the imperial cause. A more enthusiastic convert was Miura Taneyoshi, whose alignment with the court caused significant concern for Kamakura. As his name suggests, he was a member of the Miura clan, who were still influential and powerful in Kanto. If he had managed to convince even half his family to join with the emperor's cause, the Bakufu could find themselves bogged down in a regional uprising while imperial forces gained strength. In addition to the samurai, Gotoba-in also actively recruited our old friends the Sohei. The warrior monks of the Kamakura period were a shadow of their former strength, and most of the great monasteries had little need of keeping such ruffians in their cloisters after the Genpei War. We'll discuss their development in greater detail in a future episode. For now, I'll merely note that the monasteries politely declined to send any warriors, but some of their Sohei went on their own to fight on behalf of Gotoba-in. The retired emperor decided that it was time to initiate hostilities. He penned an imperial edict declaring that Hōjō Yoshitoki was an outlaw. The shogunate managed to capture the messenger charged with delivering this edict to the Kanto before he could spread this message. This allowed them to control the narrative within their domain and pitch their war efforts as an attempt to save the emperor from corrupt advisors who had abused their power and led him astray. The Bakufu mobilized the warriors of Kanto to put down this uprising and bring the nation back under the authority of the shogunate. There appears to have been some hesitation from some of the leaders in the Mandokoro. Uncertainty plagued the top brass as they debated the what-ifs. They did not know the strength of the imperial partisans, or whether they could trust their own forces not to rebel against them, and, most importantly, whether the emperor himself would lead troops in battle. In what seems like an ironic twist, it was the civilian members of the Mandokoro who pressed for a quick, decisive assault while the clan leaders fretted over uncertainties. Hōjō Masako used this moment to deliver a famous speech which helped spur the vassals and retainers into action. According to the Azuma Kagami, she ended her speech with these words, quote, "Since the days when Yoritomo put down the court's enemies and founded the Kanto regime, the obligations you have incurred for offices, ranks, emoluments, and stipends have in their sum become higher than mountains and deeper than the sea. You must, I am sure, be eager to repay them. Because of the slander of traitors, an unrighteous imperial order has now been issued. Those of you who value your reputations will wish to kill Hideyasu, Taneyoshi, and the others at once in order to secure the patrimony of the three generations of shoguns. If any of you wish to join the ex-emperor, speak out." End quote. Taneyoshi refers, of course, to Miura Taneyoshi, who had been corresponding with his clan leadership and trying to convince them to turn against the Bakufu. The Hideyasu she mentioned was Fujiwara Hideyasu, who descended from a samurai branch of the Fujiwara clan. Hideyasu had murdered one of the shogunate's deputies living in Heian-kyo and had been appointed as one of the generals of the imperial forces. It is interesting to note that at no point does she blame the sitting Tenno directly for these troubles, but instead refers to traitors who have somehow conspired to bring about an unrighteous imperial order. The Bakufu had no interest in replacing the court completely, as the throne was still a valuable source of legitimacy and established traditional rule. Couching their actions as a means by which they might save the emperor from corrupt Kuge was an old trick, but it still worked exceedingly well. The Miura clan, for their part, did not betray the Bakufu. They were one of many clans who sent troops when called upon by their provincial headquarters. Those headquarters were utilized by both sides to raise troops within the provinces that they controlled, and the armies that deployed from Kamakura would gather troops waiting at these places on their way to the capital. Three armies were marshaled to strike the imperial forces in a three-pronged approach to the capital. The army led by Hojo Yasutoki, Yoshitoki's son, traveled along the southern road, the famous Tokaido. The force led by Takeda Nobumitsu marched on a midland route through the heart of Chubu. The troops under the command of Hojo Tomotoki, another of Yoshitoki's sons, took the northern route through Echigo Province. Each army's path led them through provincial headquarters, where they gathered more troops and swelled their ranks. Their journeys were not without hazards. Before their troops departed, the Bakufu released the messenger whom they had detained and sent him back to the capital. Heian-kyo erupted with anxiety when he told them that the shogunate was raising troops who were now on their way. The accounts of the ensuing skirmishes seemed to challenge the troop counts listed in later accounts. The Azuma Kagami claims that the three Bakufu armies totaled 190,000 troops, split into divisions of 1,000, 50,000, and 40,000, respectively, while the court was said to possess 20,000 loyal samurai defenders. The advance troops sent by the imperial court to harass and delay the Bakufu armies were recorded as numbering between 60 and 100. The casualty counts, as well, are far too low to have been suffered by the large forces claimed by the Azuma Kagami and other later accounts. In his book Heavenly Warriors, historian William Wayne Ferris advises that the numbers likely reflect the correct proportion between the two forces, but are almost certainly exaggerated by a factor of at least 10. The figures of 19,000 Bakufu troops versus 2,000 imperial partisan troops is probably closer to the correct totals. While the exact numbers are debated, most historians agree that the shogunate had far larger armies than the court. Whether that ratio was 10 to 1, 2 to 1, or something in between is a matter for the scholars. The three-pronged approach to the capital was delayed by relatively small war bands who ambushed or challenged the approaching Bakufu partisans. Many of these clashes occurred in areas where the Genpei War had witnessed battles 30 years before. The shogunate armies were able to advance regardless, and none of this was really intended to stop them so much as buy time for the imperial faction to organize a proper defense. A lingering question on the minds of Bakufu leaders regarding that defense was whether the emperor himself would lead troops personally in battle. According to one account, Yoshitoki's son Yasutoki asked his father what he ought to do if the Tenno appeared on the battlefield. Yoshitoki replied, "We cannot raise our bows against the emperor's person. Quickly strip off your armor and cut your bowstrings and surrender to him. But if he is not personally in command, fight with all your might." Miura Taniyoshi led an advance force to try and hold off the central Bakufu army at the Owari River, which lies between Owari and Mino provinces. After their vanguard was routed at a place called Oido no Watashi, however, Taniyoshi thought it prudent to pull his forces back to defend the Uji River, which lies south of the capital. You may recall the Uji River as the site of two important battles during the Genpei War. This conflict would bear witness to the Third Battle of Uji, in which the imperial troops arrayed themselves along the northern bank and upon the bridge, ready to defend the capital from the shogunate's forces under Yasutoki, who had arrived first. By all accounts, the imperial army mounted a decent defense and held out against their enemies for many hours. It must have been a great relief to Yasutoki that the emperor was not leading troops personally, so there would be no need for him to cut his bowstring, strip his armor, and surrender. Eventually, the capital's defenders lost heart and fled as the Bakufu troops broke through their lines with superior numbers. The capital was sacked by invading troops as the imperial remnant tried to rally a defense. According to some sources, Miura Taniyoshi gathered the remaining imperial samurai for a last-ditch defense of the imperial palace, wanting to protect the emperor and force the Bakufu to commit treason by taking up arms against him. When he arrived, however, the gates had been shut and locked, and no matter how savagely he knocked, they would not open to him. Realizing that he had been betrayed, Taniyoshi and his followers fled to Toji Temple, where they prepared to make a last stand. Retired Emperor Go-Toba had indeed betrayed them. Shortly after they left, he sent a message to the Bakufu's representatives, informing them that this entire affair had been the work of corrupt advisors who had coerced him into supporting their rebellion. He rescinded the order to hunt and kill Hōjō Yoshitoki and issued a new edict declaring Miura Taniyoshi and his allies rebels and ordering that they be hunted and killed. Toji Temple was assaulted by Bakufu troops, and eventually Taniyoshi committed seppuku. The shogunate won the Jōkyū War, routing their enemies and securing a future for the Kamakura government. However, this victory did not mean absolute domination over the court, nor did it mean that Kamakura had established a dominant position over the capital. The Kuge, Daijō Daikan, and the imperial house itself were still hugely important politically and economically. The Bakufu's victory did mean that the party was over for Go-Toba In and his associates. Retired Emperor Go-Toba was sentenced to exile on the Oki Islands. His son, the retired Emperor Juntoku, was sent to Sado Island, far to the north of Honshu. It is recorded that part of the reason Juntoku Tenno retired in 1221 was so that he could participate in the rebellion against the Bakufu. His son, the three-year-old sitting Emperor Chūkyō, was dethroned. His two-month reign went unrecognized for centuries afterward, and it was only in 1870 that he was given an official posthumous name and counted as a valid Tenno. The retired Emperor Tsuchimikado, who had steered clear of the plotting and even opposed the conspiracy, was treated with some measure of mercy. He informed the shogunate officials of his desire to live in Tosa province on the island of Shikoku. This suited them well enough, and they sentenced him to live in Tosa. He may not have been an active plotter, but he was still part of Go-Toba In's direct family. For a new Tenno, the Bakufu sought candidates outside the line of the troublesome retired emperor. They turned to a branch of the imperial family which had previously been firmly set outside the bounds of succession, given their unacceptable intimacy with the Taira clan before and during the Genpei War. Desperate times call for desperate measures. The candidate who was elevated was one Prince Yutahito, the 9-year-old son of Prince Morisada. While Yutahito was far too young to have known any of the Taira directly, his father Morisada was raised by Taira Tomomori, the 4th son of Kiyomori. The late child Emperor Antoku was his half-brother. Now his son was becoming the next Tenno, and he was taking charge of the Insei court on behalf of the Bakufu, taking the name Go Takakura In, as he was the son of the late Emperor Takakura. His son is remembered as Emperor Go Horikawa. Accounts of the Jōkyū War contain the first mentions of imperial banners. The first such banners were rectangular and featured images of the sun and moon, either painted or embroidered in gold or silver, upon a red field. Gotoba In is reported to have given this banner to one of his generals to mark their allegiance on the battlefield. Among the courtiers caught up in Gotoba In's conspiracy was Kujō Michiye, the father of the next shogun. Michiye had accepted the post of Sessho, or regent, for the child emperor Chūkyō. Hōjō Masako was especially furious with Michiye for not doing more to prevent the debacle, and she obstructed the official installation of his son into the office of shogun to her last breath. Michiye claimed that he was coerced, but he meekly accepted the consequences. He was removed from the post of Sessho, but spared the shame of exile. He would continue to act as an ally to the Bakufu in the imperial court, regardless of Masako's grudge. As for the retired Emperor Gotoba, he would never return from the Oki Islands. He is fondly remembered in Japan for his contributions to the culture. While we have thus far only discussed his political motives, he pursued a number of hobbies throughout the early decades of the 1200s. Part of the reason he arranged his abdication in 1198, when he was only 17 years old, was to give himself more time to pursue his passions. He privately referred to the office of Tenno as a ceremonial prison. He became a master of archery, swordsmanship, and could perform both from horseback. Swords themselves became a passion for him, and he took up the art of forging swords himself. Sources claim that he was a gifted bladesmith, and in modern times it is traditional for Japanese books written about swords to begin with discussing Gotoba In's love for crafting the blade. He sponsored other sword makers throughout the capital, which encouraged a golden age of swordsmithing. A true Renaissance emperor, he also excelled at the finer arts, including calligraphy, painting, music, and especially poetry. In addition to composing wakas himself, he also acted as an editor and a critic. His friendship with Fujiwara Teika, whose own poetry is also considered gold standard, helped to ensure that the gentler capital traditions of the Heian period would survive well into the Kamakura period and beyond. Even while living in exile, Gotoba In composed poems and exchanged correspondence with other poets still living in the capital. Much of his work after 1221 was excluded from some of the official collections, however, as the compilers did not want to risk offending the Bakufu. The end of the Jōkyū War resulted in the Kamakura government gaining roughly equal standing with that of Heian-kyō. The Bakufu had no intention of letting this parody slip through their fingers, and they would reinforce their political infrastructure in the capital to ensure that a disturbance like the Jōkyū War would never happen again. Next time, we'll explore how they went about securing their equality with the court and what would happen when Kujō Yoritsune finally ascended to the office of shogun. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.